Good morning and welcome to another edition of Mornings for the Master. I'm Richard Rutledge.
And I'm Ryan Smithy.
And we're thankful that you have joined us today as we continue our study through the Old Testament. Today we're going to be looking at the second half of the lives of Jacob and Esau as they interact. So we're going to start in chapter 32. We'll look at some things there in chapter 32 and then move through several of the chapters as we touch on that topic today. Remember, we are trying to go through the Old Testament in a systematic way, and you can go back and catch up on those studies in the on-demand section by going to on-demand, Mornings for the Master, and then from there selecting that which you have missed. We also, if you had missed any of that of last year as we went through the New Testament in 2016, that's all on demand now and archived for you to listen in. So take advantage of those as well. We have several things on the bulletin board this morning. We want to start out with that and let you know what is going on. And so, Ryan, what do we have?
Well, this coming Friday begins the Standing in the Gap Lectureship at Nesbitt, Mississippi. That's going to run Friday, January 27th through Sunday, January 29th. And they're looking at how did we get the Bible? And you can search for the Nesbitt Church of Christ online and find more information there, or shoot us an email and we'll forward on that flyer to you.
All right. And then ladies, there's a Ladies' Day, which will be Saturday, January the 28th. It's going to be hosted by the West Hill Congregation in Corsicana. The theme is When Life Gives You Lemons. The speaker is Donna Drain. And that'll be Saturday the 28th, beginning at 8:30 a.m. through 1. Lunch will be provided. And if you want more information and to RSVP, dial 903-872-5696 or westhillchurchofchrist.org.
All right. And if you don't put anything else on your calendar today, put February 3rd and 4th, the 4th annual Make Me a Servant workshop right here at the Mount Vernon congregation. And this is one that I think everyone that I've heard attend it has gone away looking forward to the next year. And so we're glad that that's been well received. Adding Friday night this year, so focus particularly on the youth. Certainly invite everyone out, but Friday at 7 p.m. We'll start with Light the Fire and then go through on Saturday from 10 to about 4 with a barbecue lunch there. And so, again, we're just about, 2 weeks out now, mm-hmm. So February 3rd and 4th. And, again, you can find more information on that. I'll put it on our website today. Okay. And so that'll be on there. You can also find it on our Facebook page.
Also, we would our ultimate goal is for you to be here with us face-to-face,
right.
But we will broadcast this. If you're unable to attend, you can listen live at TGRN, and it'll be on there as well. Then February 11th, the Carriage Oaks congregation there in Bossier City, Louisiana, will be holding a teacher's workshop for the ladies. And this will be April Meacham and Tia McWhorter are going to be conducting this workshop. February 11th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And they are going to be presenting teaching methods. They're going to teach some new songs. They've got plenty of visual aids they're going to demonstrate and really just address how to teach for ladies to teach all ages that they deal with. The lunch is going to be provided. They're also going to have visual aids and other teaching resources that will be available for purchase. I'm sure they're going to bring much of the stuff from their bookstore that will be available as well. But they do ask that you would RSVP by calling 318-741-3016, and you can also get more information about it there.
And then we have a Young Men Development Conference. I think they're particularly focusing on about the age of 18 to 25 at the BCS Church of Christ in College Station. You can find more information on this at the bcschurchofchrist.com, bcschurchofchrist.com. The registration for that is now open. It's going to run March 12th through the 19th, and that's a full week. Some of it cut off here, but I want to say that begins on a Saturday night, maybe that's a Sunday afternoon through Saturday or Sunday.
Right.
So it's a full week. there of some great classes, certainly going to be challenged and built up. You can register online, and I've heard Rick Popejoy say if you'll get to College Station, they're taking care of everything else. So a free event, great development that's sure to be had there that week, and you just need to worry about your transportation to get there.
And the email that I received on this was saying that they were focusing on those age groups about, you know, like I said, about 18 to 25, somewhere around in there, but not limited to as well. You know, they there may be some a little older or just a tad younger who are mature servants and would benefit from this, but that's their target age. Also, go ahead and mark your calendars for the 51st Annual Memphis School of Preaching Lectures. That's going to be the March the 26th through the 30th, and this year's theme is Build Your Hopes on Things Eternal. And so as that approaches, we'll give you more information about those speakers, but go ahead and mark your calendar. Or if you want more information, go to msop.org, and they'll have a link there for you, or you can call them at 901-751-2242. Well, with that being said, Ryan, we had a lot on the bulletin board this morning. Let's go ahead and jump right into our study because we are tasked with a good deal of scripture that we will cover. There's, you know, about four chapters in there that these events transpire. But we've already seen in the lives of Jacob and Esau earlier on, you know, we saw their significant birth as those twins would battle within the womb, and we have Jacob latching hold of the heel of the hairy one as he's on his way out, you know, and the supplanter is his name given there. We saw already as, you know, Jacob is dwelling there at the tents, and Esau's the hunter who goes out and gets the savory meat that he is now going to be one who comes back in, sells his birthright for a bowl of red, and then steals the blessing from his father by impersonating his brother, and doing so, Esau is so angry. And in chapter 27, as he has now been so angered about it, he says that, you know, the time of my father's death is at hand, and mourning for him is there, but after that, I'm going to kill you. And so Jacob had been sent away, and as he had gone away, he had found his wife, ends up with two wives, with Rachel and Leah, the daughters of Laban. He works for Laban those 20 years, and now he has returned. He has made his way back, and we're looking forward to a reunion now with his brother, and not necessarily one that he believes is going to be a pleasant reunion. So in chapter 32, we see this preparation made for that meeting.
I love just throw this in there for a minute, but the idea of one who has gone out empty and is coming back full, and that would be a good summarization of the last few chapters there, that God has richly blessed him, and now he's going to see that fulfillment of the promise to be brought back home. But like you said, it nevertheless is an anxious reunion. So.
Right. Again, and you know, you bring that point. He went out empty. He did. You know, when he left, it was only going to be his mother anticipated for a short period of time. That was, you know, as she speaks to him there in chapter 27 and points out the fact that, you know, here he is and he's so angry with you. And there in chapter 37, in that final section, that she is now going to send him away. Verse 44, it says, "Now therefore, my son," verse 43, "obey my voice, arise and flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him, and then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of the both of you in one day?" You know, so it was an anticipated a short stay.
Right.
But it ends up now, we're 20 years later when we get into chapter 32. And so these preparations are seen in these chapter 32. It's the first 24 verses basically are these making these preparations. So let's just I know it's a lengthy read, but let's read through those, and then we'll come back and make a few notes.
So verse 1 through
24.
So Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." And he called the name of that place Manahem. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother into the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, "Speak thus to my lord Esau, thus your servant Jacob says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkey, flocks, male and female servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight." Then the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he also is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him." So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks and herds and camels, into two companies. And he said, "If Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company, which is left, will escape." Then Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you,' I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant, for I crossed over this river Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, 'I will surely treat you well, and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for a multitude.' So he lodged there that same night, and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau his brother, 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 lambs, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 fowls. And he delivered them to the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, 'Pass over before me, and put some distance between successive droves.' And he commanded the first one, saying, 'When Esau my brother meets you and asks you, saying, "To whom do you belong, and where are you going? Who are these in front of you?" Then you shall say, "They are your servant Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau. And behold, he also is behind us." So he commanded the second, the third, and all who followed the drove, saying, "In this manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him. And also say, 'Behold, your servant Jacob is behind us.' For he said, 'I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterward I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me.' So the present went on over before him, but he himself lodged that night in the camp. And he arose at night and took his two wives, his two female servants, his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them and sent them over the brook and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day."
Now, you know, it starts and it just reminds us of what was happening there. So Jacob went on his way. Well, you know, he'd already had this encounter with his daddy-in-law, Laban. You know, after he is now fleeing from Laban's house, Laban has made pursuit because the theft of the gods, household gods. He's searching them out. But then there's this treaty that's made between them, this covenant made between the two in Mizpah there. And so now it's after this that now he is makes his way in the southerly direction. He's heading towards Jabbok there. And it says that the angel of God met him there. And, you know, we saw Abraham encountered with the angel of the Lord, the angel of God, there in chapter 18. It tells us there that Abraham, and we know that this theophany or this manifestation there were three that appeared to him, and two of which were angels, and the other was the angel of the Lord, and he speaks to him and talks to him as to speaking to God. Verse 22 of chapter 18, "And went forth from Sodom, but Abraham stood before the Lord," and it's with him that he is now, you know, he would discuss with. We know that the other two were angels, chapter 19 and verse number 1, and so here he is in this presence. And so the angels of God met him, angels of God, as we even see in chapter 28, he saw the angels of God ascending and descending upon it. And what he sees and what he witnesses here says when the angels of God met him, angels plural, then Jacob said, this is the camp of God, mm-hmm. or the army of God, or the host of God. Sometimes that word is used speaking of an army. In Exodus chapter 14 and verse number 24, it came to pass that in the morning watch the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and the cloud and troubled the host of the Egyptians. That's that same word that here is translated as camp. When he says, now this is the camp, when speaking of the Egyptian, it was speaking of their army. And in also the camp of the army in 1 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 15, the same word is used. And there was a trembling in the host and in the field and among the people, the garrison and the spoilers, they also trembled as the earth quaked, so that it was very great trembling. In other words, in the actual camp spot. Mm-hmm. So here he says this is God's camp or God's army camping here. So he's not alone, mm-hmm. is what we see. And so he called the name of the place Mahanaim. The place, literally, the name means the two armies of or two camps are here. And so it's not just him, but it's him and God's army in this place. And I think it's interesting that, as you pointed out, as he sent his messengers ahead, that he himself remained in mm-hmm. the camp. He's staying there with the armies of God. And so he sends these messengers out, and he sends them out before him to his brother Esau, heading to the land of Seir. And that's where they are going to his land. And eventually we see that it is going to be called such, Deuteronomy chapter 2 and verse number 4, where it says, command you the people, saying, you are to pass through the coast of your brethren, the children of Esau, which dwell in Seir, and they shall be afraid of you, and take good heed unto yourselves, therefore. But this is where their dwelling place is, and it is the dwelling place that God himself would actually give them. He gave them that place to dwell in. Here he dwelt in Seir. But he says they sent them out to this place and sent him out to find favor in his sight. That's what this whole bribe, almost this gift, mm-hmm. is for. Its purpose is that he may find favor in the sight of his brother Esau, verse number 5. Again, that word favor, we see it in Genesis 6 and verse 8. It's the word where Noah found grace in the eyes of God. And so here's what he's wanting to do. This is what they're going to tell him in the chapter 33, that when he asks, what does this mean? That I may find grace in your sight. He wants to find grace in his sight. But as they were traveling out there, Esau's coming towards them. You know, he sent a messenger out, but apparently Esau has heard that there's a traveler's coming through, and so they meet one another. Now, it doesn't tell us that they've had an exchange,
right,
or anything, that these messengers spoke to Esau. But instead, it just tells us that as we were coming out, then, you know, he says, we came to your brother Esau, and he also came and was coming to meet us with 400 men who are with him. And remember what he had said, next time I see you, I'm mm-hmm. going to kill you. So we're looking, you know, here he is with 400 soldiers, and he's going to, you know, volunteer to leave some mm-hmm. later. So we know that these are men of battle who could protect and take care of, is what he offers later to take care of Jacob and his.
Right.
But they're also, this is who they think they're meeting.
Right.
You know, is these 400 armed followers who are attending him. And remember in chapter 27, in the chapter of blessing there, that his dad told him in chapter 27, verse 40, by the sword you shall live and shall serve your brother, and it shall come to pass when you have dominion that you shall break his yoke from off your neck. But in other words, Esau was going to be a man of war and a man of battle. Mm-hmm. He was a man who was going to live by the sword. And so Remember, he's already anticipating this is going to be a bad reunion, and now he comes out there. I'm sure these guys turned around and hightailed back to Jacob and let him know there's an army coming your way. And because Jacob was, it says, greatly afraid. That was his response to this news. And, you know, that would be what he would rightly expect. He says in verse 11, "For I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother and the mother with the children." Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what he's thinking. He's thinking that he is going to accomplish what he had stated in chapter 27, verse 41. But then he said, he offers up these gifts. He sends them out before him and hope that they would be received in the way that they are meant. Begin to break away that rage and to tear down that rage. But it tells us all that he has sent, and he has sent a great number. I mean, look at just what he has, 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams and 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls and 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. Now, he's delivered them in procession as they go out. You know, it's not like just one great herd, but he's delivered them in successive procession. In other words, you know, here comes one and then another gift and then another gift and then another gift. But even with that, it's going to take a lot of guys from Jacob's household,
right,
you know, just to handle these.
Just to deliver them.
Right.
Before we departed there too much, I did want to make mention, J.J. mentioned Jacob's not one of his favorite characters. In fact, you know, maybe one of his least favorite of the Bible. But I do think this section helps us see a lot of change that comes in Jacob's life, whereas earlier he had been a man of deception. He had been a man of even to dishonesty there, dealing with his brother and as with his father. But here's a man that as he's coming back, he's treating Esau different. There's a level of respect. He's not trying to deceive him. He may be trying to appease him. But then also there are just those few verses where this problem is there, but Jacob's going to go to God. He's worried, but he's going to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And he's put a lot of his faith, his trust here, that God is going to keep his promise. And I think we see that worry in him. I don't know how this is going to unfold, but here it is. I'm going to lay it before the throne of God, and he's going to take care of me.
Well, even with that, you know, I mean, sometimes we read into the idea that, okay, maybe he's worried. Well, here's what he said he was worried about, that they would come and attack and kill the mother and the children. Not even maybe worried for his own life, but for the lives of others, and he's appeasing this.
All right.
You know, because he does have this faith, and his faith is growing, and he does, you know, that's exactly what he does. He petitions to, you know, the God of my father Abraham. He's going to petition God about this.
Mm-hmm.
And we do. I mean, we see this young man as a young man. He takes, you know, he gets his brother's birthright, not by deception on that, but just because of the man Esau was. He despised it, you know. He thought it was nothing to be concerned about. But we see this deception that plays about with a mother, you know, and her deception and making a child do something, or, you know, her son, her offspring, do something that is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we see how he was influenced by her and heavily influenced. But we do see a man now coming back and owning up, if you will, to what he has done. He is now going to repay his brother in that way. And so he does this very thing. Now, he's reinsured as he, you know, he's there waiting. He waited on the side of the river, and then he goes over and he's there alone, and he wrestles with the angel of the Lord, and his name will be changed. He will no longer be called the supplanter, but he will be called Israel, the Prince of God, and the one who has striven with God. His name would then be changed. But that reunion now takes place right after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right after he wrestles with God, wrestles with the angel of God, the sun breaks, because remember he had to touch, the angel touched his hip because the sun was coming up. And now the sun lifts up, and it tells us in chapter 33 that He's preparing for the worst. Notice verses 1 through 4 of chapter 33.
Now Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and there Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. And he put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Joseph last. Then he crossed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept.
You know, we see that he is, you know, he prepared for the worst in this. He sees him coming, and he sees him coming with these 400 men, and his response is now he divided the children up among Leah and Rachel and the two maidservants, and he put the maidservants and their children in front, and he put Leah and her children behind, and then Rachel and Joseph were last. And so when we look at it, how he lined them all up, you know, he's going to put those maidservants out front, which is, you know, Zilpah and Bilhah, the, you know, Rachel's maidservant Bilhah, and Dan and Naphtali, her sons, and Zilpah, and which was Leah's handmaid, with Gad and Asher. So we have, you know, Bilhah, Dan, and Naphtali, Zilpah, and Gad and Asher. They're the ones out front. And then Leah with her children, which, you remember, her children are Reuben and Levi and Simeon and Judah. And then later, Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah, you know, those are the ones that are now with her. And then the last ones are going to be Rachel and Joseph. Now, Benjamin hasn't been born yet at this period of time. So he stationed them in this manner, and he sends them out. And there's a reasoning behind it, because he's anticipating the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 32, it said there that you read, you know, he says that these 400 are coming. And it said in verse number 7, Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two bands, and said, if Esau comes at one company and smites it, then the other company may be left to escape. You know, so here, you know, is his reasoning. Somebody ought to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But now here's where we see the difference in him, this change that you were talking about. You talk about going out empty and coming back full.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had said in chapter 32, as he spoke of that, he said, I crossed this river with my staff,
right,
and I've come back with two companies. You know, I've come back full. And he's changed here also, because he puts them there, and now he goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first one to die, that's a father. You know, that's a husband. That's the one who is going to stand in the gap and protect those who are loved by him. It's like the great shepherd that we see even in Jesus, and Jesus would teach in John chapter 10 about that shepherd. He puts forth his own sheep, and he goes before them, and the sheep follow him. You know, he is going before. He is the one who, if you keep reading John 10, he says that the shepherd gives his life for his sheep, and he is leading that way, and he now is becoming the leader that he needs to be. But the unexpected reception, even though he prepared for the worst, the unexpected reception happened in verses 4 through 11. Let's read those real quickly.
But Esau ran to meet him, embraced him, fell on his neck, and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, who are these with you? So he said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. Then the maidservants came near, they and their children, and bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children, and they bowed down. Afterward, Joseph and Rachel came near, and they bowed down. Then Esau said, what do you mean by all this company which I met? And he said, these are to find favor in the sight of my lord. But Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. And Jacob said, no, please. If I have found now favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I had seen the face of God, and you were pleased with me. Please, take my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. So he urged him, and he took it.
You know, here, again, this is a great surprise. Mm. And I think it's almost, you know, it reminds me anyways of that great surprise reunion of the prodigal son in Luke 15. You know, the prodigal son had been expecting, you know, I went away, and I was wasteful, and I, you know, I was sinful. He saw, when he came to himself, he said, I know what I'll do. I'll go back and I'll be my father's servant. I'm no longer worthy to be called his son. But it tells us in Luke 15, and even with that, with the father representing God for us in that parable of the lost son, and how God reacts when we want to come home. Mm-hmm. You know, but he says, and he arose and he came to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And here's what Esau's done now. You know, the years of separation, those 20 years have broken down that anger. Now, that's what his mother said.
Right.
You know, go away for a little while until this happens. It may have taken a little bit longer than anticipated. But his brother does. Here's the reunion. I mean, he embraces him, and he fell on his neck, and he kissed him. We're going to see that later. Mm-hmm. You know, in chapter 45, when we look at Joseph, you know, Joseph, who was they wanted to murder his brothers, wanted to. They end up selling him. He goes through all of the hardships that he endures in Potiphar's house, in prison, and then he's elevated in Pharaoh's house. But when they finally show up and he sees, he can't contain himself any longer when he sees his brother Benjamin. And it tells us there in chapter 45, verses 14 and 15, that he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and he wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. And moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them. And after that, his brethren talked with him. You know, a reunion, you know, sometimes those bygones just have to be bygones. Mm-hmm. And there is this family that is there. And so he lifted up his eyes and he saw, and he says, who are all of these with you? He saw the heritage of Jacob, you know, his nieces and nephews and sisters-in-laws and all of these. You know, he sees these blessings that God had given. Again, I went out empty and I came in with two companies. Now, I have all of this, these children which are a heritage from God, Psalm 127, verses 3 through 5, and he's come back with a quiver full. Mm-hmm. And so this blessing that God has given him is observed by his brother Esau. And then notice even in verse 8, again, he asks, what is the meaning of all of this? These companies that I met over and over and over again. Well, he's speaking about those that were talked about that you read in chapter 32. Those, as he sent one after another after another. What is this? Well, it was meant that I may find favor. And in verse number 9, Esau wouldn't take it. Mm-hmm. And here's a great attitude we see even with Esau. Now, you know, I think that we see some of this early on with Esau. He wasn't a materialistic kind of guy to begin with, you know. I mean, he despised the birthright, you know. He was thinking in the here and now a lot, you know. I'm hungry, I'm about to die. And so, yeah, take it. Give me the food to eat. But here he says, I have enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the attitude that we could even emulate from Esau.
Right.
You know, Proverbs 30, verses 15 and 16, you know, he talks about there are some who are never satisfied. And it says the leech, now we don't remember the leech, you know, the bloodsucker, the one who's a parasite. He says the leech has two daughters, and give, that's their names. The leech has two daughters, give and give. There are three things that are never satisfied. And four says, never say, it is enough. The grave, the barren womb, the earth that is not filled with water, and the fire never says, it's enough. Mm. You know, he says, there are some things out there that never say they have enough. And there's two leeches, give and give, who do not as well. You know, but here Esau says, I have enough. Mm.
And I can't help but think of Esau there, especially maybe in the eyes of our society. If anyone had the expectation to be able to say, I deserve it, you owe me something, mm-hmm. Esau would be it. And I think you see the change of his heart. I think that's maybe where Jacob can finally take a breath and say, okay, he's not out to get me. He's not trying to get anything that I have. And so he can relax and know that this is indeed a warm reception.
It is. I mean, he offers this to him, and he says, you know what, brother, I've been blessed. I don't need this from you. Keep it for yourself. And, you know, the Proverbs writer points out that he that is greedy of gain troubles his own house. But he who hates gifts shall live. Well, you know, sometimes we're worried about more what I can get, mm-hmm. you know, and this greedy gain. We've already mentioned the prodigal as he finally comes to himself, but what was he thinking about? He was thinking about, you know, taking that which was his right now and going and spending it and thinking about the gain, the inheritance. Proverbs 20, verse 21, an inheritance may be gotten hastily at the beginning, but the end thereof shall not be blessed. That's the prodigal. Or even the idea of desire for earthly wealth, 1 Timothy chapter 6, 6 through 11. You know, there are those who have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But he says, I have enough. But it doesn't end there. And here's the flip side of that coin. And it says then in verses 10 and 11, Jacob said, no, if I have now found favor in your sight, receive this present from my hand. And he begs him, basically. He says in verse 11, please take this blessing that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me because I have enough. So he urged him, and he took it. Sometimes we need to receive the gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are, and when we don't, you know, when there are times when people offer you things, you know, to give you these gifts, and you know, maybe they need it more than you, mm-hmm. even, but they want to give it. In Acts chapter 20, verse 35, remember, Paul speaks about the words of Jesus that it is more blessed to give than to receive. When we are unwilling to accept, then at times we cut the blessing short of others who want to be the giver.
Mm.
And so after he objected, he was persuaded, he accepted the gift. But then he wants to then continue with a journey. And you know, I just had that section, verses 12 through 16, can two walk together unless they be agreed? Because now Esau makes an offer. Read those verses for us, 12 through 16, if you would.
Then Esau said, let us take our journey. Let us go, and I will go before you. But Jacob said to him, my lord knows that the children are weak, and the flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. And if the men should drive them hard one day, all the flock will die. Please let my lord go on ahead before his servants. I will lead on slowly at a pace which the livestock that go before me, and the children are able to endure until I come to my lord in Seir. And Esau said, let me now leave you with some of the people that are with me. But he said, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my lord. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth to build himself a house, and he made booths for his livestock. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth.
So we have there's, you know, this parting of ways that takes place. But, you know, Esau said, let us, you know, take our journey together. Let's travel together, and I'll go before you. But Jacob, you know, he said, this is going to cause a problem. He said, I've got children who are weak. Now, at this time, Joseph is probably right around 6 years old. So he has some, you know, the children there, but there's the mothers as well, you know, the mother flocks, that's what he says, the flocks and the herds which are nursing. The fact is that if, you know, he's going to be overdriving these individuals, this livestock who is nursing, could easily kill them.
Hmm.
So he said it's going to be hard on the children, but it'll also be hard on my livestock if we let these military men set the pace. You know, you've got strong, hard men. I've got soft people and livestock. And he was concerned about the livestock as well as the people. You know, I got so disgusted. I can't even remember what the dog food was. But I saw it just a little while ago, commercial again. And the commercial has this woman on there, and the dog and the little boy is playing with the dog. And she said, my boys have sensitivities to food, you know. And then the focus turns not from just sensitivity, food sensitivity for the child, but but it's all about the food sensitivities of the dog. And now the dog, Bo or whatever his name is so much better now that he's eating. You know, it's like the son, you've equated an animal with a child, and that. I mean, that really dictates the mindset of our society. Many in our society today, they have elevated that which God has given man to be over. They have made them equal with man, and they're not. But with that being said, it's not the fact either that God's not concerned about all of his creation. You know, in Proverbs 12, verse 10, it says, a righteous man regards the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. And so he says a righteous man is even concerned about the well-being of his livestock. And he is, but they're not because they're only equal with human beings. And so he cares for them. Isaiah 40, verse 11 says, he shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs in his arm and carry them in his bosom and shall gently lead those that are with young. And that's the righteous man. And Jacob says this now, we have children who are weak and the flock and the herds are nursing. So I can't go at the pace that you want to go. So instead, he says, you know what? I'll lead them until I come to my Lord in Seir. Now, you know, he was sending a message to Seir. That's where he was sending it to. And they came, you know, verse number 3, they were sending there. Now he's on his way, returned that day to his way to Seir. And then we'll see him later even going back there. 35 verse 29, after Isaac dies, they were gathered unto the people being full of days, but then we're going to see his brother coming down once again as we have another reunion at a funeral that will take place. So what we don't hear of Jacob ever going up to Seir for this reunion, for this where he says, until I come to my Lord in Seir. He's not heading that direction. They were heading opposite directions. He's not heading in that direction. But he's talking about a later meeting that would take place. Now, whether it took place or didn't take place, it's not recorded that it took place. So then we find him as he gets to Succoth and goes journeying down there. He's in Shechem, in the city of Shechem, and there he buys a parcel of land in Shechem in verses 17 to 20. And so he's there for a little while in Shechem. In Shechem is where chapter 34 takes place. It's a bad time in his life. That's where his daughter is defiled, Dinah is defiled, and then his boys, two of his sons, go in there, and they deceive the people of Shechem. Remember, they trick them into being circumcised, and then on the third day when they're all stove up, then they go in and kill all of the men of the city. That was Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, and they go in and kill the men of the city, and then they take all of the spoils of it. And, you know, the father rebukes them, but not because of the murder they have done, but he says, you know what, you have made it hard for me. So, you know, we find him leaving Shechem, and then he goes to Bethel in chapter 35. But then we're going to see them come together once again after some the events transpire in chapter 35. Now, remember, in there we see that Benjamin's going to be born in chapter 35. This is where verses 16 to 20, where during the birth, or just basically as he's born, that Rachel names him, but then she passes away. She dies, and she is buried, and a pillar is set for her grave there that is even sustained until the time of Moses, even to this day, he says, that it was there. But the main thing I want us to look at is at the end of chapter 35, and that's where we see Jacob and Esau coming together, verses 27 to 29, at the death of his father.
Then Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre, or Kirjath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had dwelled. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years. So Isaac breathed his last and died, and was gathered to his people, being old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him.
All right. Now, when we look at some of these things, it gets a little bit confusing at times when we look at, these events, the death of Isaac here. And because, you know, the pages of our Bible are not in chronological order of the events that happen. But when we look at the ages and some of the timestamps that we have throughout, then we can get a better perspective of some of these events that happen. And when this event happens, it tells us that, you know, he comes to his father, and he's going to be in Mamre, and the place where Abraham and Isaac had dwelt. And it just tells us that Isaac was 180 years old. Well, back in chapter 25 and verse 26, when Jacob was born, Isaac was 60 years old. So that means that this time, when he dies, Jacob was 120 years old. But when we look at it, he is 130 years old when he stands before Pharaoh in Egypt, Genesis 47, verses 8 through 9. And at that time, Joseph had been governor for 10 years. Remember, because Joseph was 30 years old, chapter 41, verse 46, when he stands before. So, you know, when we look at those things and we look at, okay, by the time Jacob and his family make it over to Pharaoh, you know, move over to Goshen and stand before him, Jacob says that he was 130 years old at that time. Well, you know, there at that time, Joseph's 40. Because he was 10 years, 10 years of being governor that time, because he was 30 when he stood before him in chapter 41, verse 46. So therefore, here he's 120. That means that he was 120 when Joseph was promoted at the age of 30. He's 107 when Joseph sold, and so consequently, Isaac would be 167 years old when Joseph was sold. Well, Joseph hasn't been sold yet in our text. That's not going to happen until chapter 37. So he must have survived the selling of Joseph for 13 years. So this is sometime between, you know, Joseph, chapter 37, when Joseph is sold, and when he gets to go stand before the Egyptian Pharaoh. So it's a little confusing of some of these events if we don't tie everything together, if we don't get some of our dates from events that will happen later, because if we read a book, we always read a book basically in chronological order.
Right.
And the Bible doesn't always do that for us. So we see him here at that point in time. So this death that was recorded where they come together is after the event of Joseph being sold. And then in verse 29, it just basically tells us that Isaac breathed his last and died, and the body without the spirit is dead. James tells us in James chapter 2 and verse 26, and so he has died, he's gathered to his people, and being old and full of days, you know, he has, you know, lived a good long life. But then we see again these brothers come together. Esau and Jacob buried him. And Esau listed first here. Esau's firstborn son, even though he's not the son for promise, Jacob's going to be. But he still was the firstborn son. And then chapter 36 gives us those descendants of Esau. And then, you know, there becomes the end of this thought and this focus on the lives of Jacob, on the lives of Esau. Now Jacob's going to continue to be an individual who is in the pages of text, but our focus is going to change in chapter 37 to his son Joseph. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be the primary individual that things revolve around through the remainder of our time. That's all we have time for today. I'm glad that you have joined us. Ryan, any further thoughts or comments before we leave the study off today?
No, I think that's the thing I remember from him is, you know, there's a lot of negativity, I guess, associated with his early life, but certainly one that I think is true of a lot of these people that are recorded for us is what we get to see of them is their growth and pay attention to who they were when they started, but also what did they end up as, and that's what I'm thankful for, that we can look at Jacob and we see a life that was blessed and a life that could end up honoring God. And, you know, we see those promises keep being fulfilled as you trace, you know, we're really streaming down to come down. This is the family that God is going to choose through whom his son is going to come. So,
and, you know, with that, we see, you know, this that's one of those marks of inspiration of the text. Mm-hmm. Because we see these people of God, these men of God, in all their faults. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, all of the bad stuff is recorded. I mean, we're going to have Judah, the right. tribe of Jesus, and what the, you know, Judah did in chapter 38. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to see all of these shortcomings. We'll see it in the book of Exodus with Moses. You know, his ups and downs, his highs right. and lows, and ultimately not even being able to enter into the promised land.
Right.
But there was no man as meek as Moses. Mm-hmm. You know, we have these servants of God, and we see that, and we see it with Jacob. Mm-hmm. The hope that we have, you know what, there could be times in our lives where we end up, we're like, you know, Jacob when he is trying to force things, you know, by his mother's instruction right. and trying to force it by to receive a blessing by deception when it was his to have all along. Mm-hmm. Or we can't even be the ones who later who are able to, you know what, walk by faith, mm-hmm. even in the most difficult of times. We're going to see that really in the life of Joseph.
Right.
Until next time, we hope that you have a great and a blessed day. But don't forget, you can tune in just a bit to Jim Dearman with the Good News Today, followed by Reflections Upon the Precious Book Divine. And remember, tune in each weekday morning at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time for Mornings for the Master, and hope that your day is good and blessed.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.